So I know a lot of you out there listening have younger kids as well as teenagers in the house, and I'm excited to share with you about a new show that you and your younger kids are going to love. It's called Mysteries About True Histories, affectionately known as MATH. Every episode follows Max and Molly, who have just been recruited into a secret order of problem solvers, on an adventure through time packed with puzzles, hidden equations, history, and laughs. The series explores themes like the stories behind math, critical thinking, code breaking, pattern solving, and so much more. MATH is geared towards kids ages 6 and up and can be enjoyed by the whole family. Episodes drop every Thursday and are about 15 minutes long, the perfect length for a car ride, mealtime, break times, or bedtime. Each is stacked with so much laughter that your kids won't even realize how much they're learning. So tune into Mysteries About True Histories with your kids. You can follow and listen on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Hey, what is up, podcast listeners? I am so glad that you have found yourself at the Joyful Courage Podcast. This is a place where we celebrate real and raw conversations about raising kids with conscious parenting and positive discipline. I'm your host, Casey O'Rourke. I'm a facilitator. I'm a parent coach. Most importantly, I am a mom of two teenagers, and I am walking the path of more mindful, intentional parenting right alongside of you. Please know that this podcast is created for you. I create it for you and for our community. And if you love it, feel free to share it with all of your family and friends over social media. Let's spread the word. Let's get as many people as possible listening to this show. Please write a review on Apple's podcast, formerly known as iTunes, and join the Patreon community where parents just like you are contributing just a small little amount each month to the show and enjoying perks like monthly webinars and community conversations about the content you hear on this podcast. Check the show notes for links and more details on all of that. I am so, so grateful that you are here. And now, enjoy the show. Hey, podcast listeners, welcome back. My guest today is Bonnie J. Ruff. Bonnie is an author, journalist, and speaker focusing on families, health, education, parenting, and sexuality. Her latest book is Beyond Birds and Bees, bringing home a new message to our kids about sex, love, and equality. She's written recently for the New York Times on teaching young children about boundaries and consent, The Atlantic on the link between sex ed and gender equality, and The Cut on raising kids without sexual shame, as well as The Washington Post on why it's important to teach kids about sex in mixed gendered groups. I am so excited to welcome her to the podcast. Hi, Bonnie.
Hi, Casey. Thank you so much for having me.
You are so welcome. I'm so glad to have you. Please share a little bit more with the listeners about how you found yourself doing what you do.
Yeah, it's been a discovery process. You know, I think I've always known that I'm a writer because I would have been someone who just couldn't figure out what I wanted to do in life. I always get fascinated by a new subject and just want to dig in and explore and learn as much as I can until I'm satisfied. So being a writer and a journalist lets me dig deep and then go on to the next thing that fascinates me. So I've found over the course of my writing career that even though my books are very different one to the next so far, they all seem to have these common threads that I'm now with Beyond Birds and Bees finally starting to see. And those are very much family, parenting, health, and sexuality, especially, you know, I've been really inspired by girls and women's experiences. And it's been really fun with Beyond Birds and Bees to open up that exploration into gender experiences in general. So Beyond Birds and Bees is a really fun kind of, my first two books are memoirs, so they're more literary books, and Beyond Birds and Bees is this really fun throwback to my journalism days, my reporter days, and it's just been awesome to have the chance to write in a more topical way about these subjects that are so, so exciting and so needed in our education at the moment.
Yeah. And you have daughters, right?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Oh, of course. So it's not a coincidence. Thank you for the important reminder that I am also a mom. I live in Seattle with my husband and the father of our two daughters, who are now 11 and 7. So I have a middle schooler and an elementary schooler. And certainly being a parent has been a major piece of the inspiration for every big work that I do in my writing.
Yeah, I find it's a really fascinating adventure to be both someone who is influencing, writing, speaking about an experience while also living it. Mm-hmm. Right? Living it with our inside of our own families. So I'm guessing that you're like me and your professional work is also really personal.
Yeah, it goes back and forth from, I think, responding to things that are happening in my life and wanting to know, okay, how did I do? Or, you know, what could I do if that comes up again? And then also, I'm a real kind of over planner, preparer type for what I anticipate will be life's challenges. Mm-hmm. So historically, you know, my first
good
book
luck
is
with
about
that. Teen years are a shit show.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, I think I use my work as an opportunity to get myself ready for challenges I anticipate that I'll face as a parent. Or, you know, I mean, my first book was about a genetic disorder that runs in my family and what it was like for my husband and I to be in the generation of the test and you know, DNA test, prenatal testing, all that, and making a decision about whether and how to have biological children. And, you know, so much of that decision making in that book happened like, you know, years and months before we ever actually had a pregnancy. So I'm a planner and I love to explore, you know, what I think might be coming. I just kind of figure out what are my big question marks? What makes me nervous? What am I afraid of? And then I guess it's kind of like an exposure sort of therapy. I go after it and see if I can get used to things before, you know, in time for them to come.
Right. And so your book, Beyond Birds and Bees, is heavily influenced by what you learned and observed during your experience of living in Amsterdam. I feel like reading your book, I was like, oh my God, everyone should have to live in Amsterdam. talk a little bit about how the Dutch culture played a part in informing your content.
Well, you know, I think the first thing I'll say is that I did not pick up on it at first. I went to live in Amsterdam with Dan and our oldest daughter when she was not even quite two. And we lived there for a year and a half when we were just kind of figuring out the whole parenting gig. And so I was noticing a lot of things that stood out to me about differences between what Dutch and American parents did, including how Dutch and American moms and dads and grandmas and grandpas and nannies and teachers in the preschools and the upper schools would, or the older schools would approach bodies and sexuality and, you know, really normalizing that kind of thing. But it didn't really sink in for me, you know, why that mattered more than the fun fact that Dutch parents also let their kids eat toast with sprinkles on it for breakfast. That all kind of sunk in later, you know, when we lived in Amsterdam, aside from kind of the other fun cultural things that were different, there was something that really jumped out at me as different within myself. I felt better and more comfortable and happier in my body as a woman than I had ever felt in my adult life. Just really comfortable and at home in my skin in a way that I would have thought I never could have felt again. I think it's something we all experience for a time in childhood, you know, just this sort of inherent worth and belonging in the world. And it was the most freeing, inspiring, energizing atmosphere to live in. But again, like, I didn't know why that was happening. I just loved it. Mm-hmm. So moving back here to the US after our stay there, we had our second daughter and, you know, really looked around and saw how the experiences that we offer boys and girls in the US are just, you know, so much more gendered and different. So as we had our new baby, I kind of had a freak out. Mm-hmm. I noticed how much more of a sexist culture that we lived in and realized that I had had the experience of living in a more gender equal society, and I felt it to my core. Mm-hmm. It changed the way I lived and the way I felt about myself. And I wanted that for my kids, and I wanted that for every kid and every person. And so that was when I decided to go back and take a closer look and see if I could discover if there really was a connection between those little things I noticed about, you know, the ways parents and teachers would normalize nudity and help the genders stay comfortable with each other throughout childhood and accept childhood sexual exploration and children's sexuality as like part of normal, healthy development, in case that was what was building toward that incredible, you know, powerful social effect of gender equality. I learned that the Dutch have fantastic sexual health statistics, but also some of the highest gender equality in the world. The latest ranking, they're third from the best, while we in the U.S. are still trying to crack the top 40. And for me, I got the opportunity to see how that feels to live in that and how families and schools build that from birth on up.
Yeah. So what I'm hearing you say is that, like, that sex education, and I think that it's interesting, and I'm guessing, and this is probably the American in me, whenever we say sex ed, it's like the deed, right? It's like education around getting it on, which is so much more expansive than that. And what I'm hearing you say, it's like, it's the bodies, it's how genders are encouraged to interact with each other. And I'm hearing you really talk about how all of this is just kind of woven into the fabric of raising kids.
Right. And I think a lot of it, as, you know, parents, no matter where we are working a lot of the same important angles that we need to be, not just, you know, we're doing our best to teach our kids those body parts and making sure that they have accurate terminology for those. Nicknames are fine, right? But a child does need to know the correct terminology for everything from their nose and their elbow to their penis or their vulva. And so we're doing that the best we can. And yet, and then on the other side, we're also, I think, just really naturally making sure that we give them a social emotional context to complement that. So we're teaching them, you know, did you ask first before you, you know, tackled your friend when they came over for a play date, to, you know, giving them just early beginnings about what is consent, what is a healthy friendship. Does your friend have the, you know, like the same things you like? Do they have different boundaries from yours? You know, reminding kids they're obligated to respect other people's boundaries. Those are really kind of normal social emotional things that lots of caring parents are teaching their kids without realizing that what they're doing is half of the job of nurturing healthy sexuality in their kids. And then that other half is just really being open about those, about bodies and reproduction, sexual diversity, and practicing talking about it enough so that it feels normal. You know, I think, it was really a big eye opener for me living in the Netherlands to see, you know, the families letting their kids splash around naked in the park, and not just really little kids, in the wading pool or.
Hey, everybody, listen, I'm so excited to give you an update on Songfinch. Songfinch delivers. I shared last month that I was going to have them create an original song for Ian, my graduating senior. Well, the song is done. And the process of co-creating it with the artist on Songfinch was so cool. I got to provide details and ideas, and then the musician of my choice wrote up the lyrics, put it to the music that I picked, and the results are so cool. I can't wait to surprise Ian with it. I will be sure to record it and share it with all of you. Songfinch is an innovative service that lets you create an original radio quality song inspired by your own life and the people you love. It's completely unique, personal, and it lasts forever. After moving through their process, you get the final results in 4 to 7 days. For a limited time, Songfinch is letting our listeners upload their song to Spotify for free. So you and the lucky person you gift it to can listen to it anywhere, anytime. Whether your song is for Father's Day, an upcoming graduation, wedding, or anniversary, or even just a gift to show your loved one how much you care. Start your song now to lock in one of Songfinch's top artists. Go to songfinch.com/joyful and start your song. After you purchase, you'll be prompted to add Spotify streaming for your original song for free, which is a $50 value. Again, my URL is songfinch.com/joyful. Don't forget to share your song with us too. songfinch.com/joyful. Hey friends, as a podcast listener myself, I always get so excited to share when I find a new show that I think is super useful. So today I want to tell you about Understood Explains. This is a podcast that tackles one important topic per season. And this season is all about navigating individualized education plans and is hosted by teacher and special education expert Juliana Ertube. Getting the support our kids need in school can feel tricky, and we aren't always sure what it is that they need. When I listened to the episode titled, Does My Child Need an IEP? It offered up so much useful information that I could really see supporting parents who are in this consideration. The host is so knowledgeable and really breaks down the content in a way that helps listener go from completely overwhelmed to actually starting to feel empowered. Other episodes in the series highlight the difference between IEPs and 504 plans, as well as a whole episode that busts common myths about special education. To listen to Understood Explains, search for Understood Explains wherever you listen to podcasts. That's Understood Explains. So check it out. You won't be sorry.
You know, even going, you know, toilet training side by side, you know, across genders in the preschool, where there's one little bathroom and one little row of potties and no dividers, so that kids would get used to the idea like bodies are normal, genders are more alike than different, bodies have their differences, and that doesn't, that's all. but we can be used to those. We don't have to be, you know, morbidly fascinated by them, because if they're normalized, then they're not embarrassing. We don't kind of get those little seeds of shame planted early by, you know, implying that there's something humiliating here or something we need to be really secretive about. So it was just incredible to learn about that difference between normalizing kind of everyday non-sexual human body nudity and separating that in their minds from erotic nudity. Whereas I kind of think that distinction's missing in my culture in the US and in my family. So that was something we found ways to work on.
Yeah. And I'm guessing too, like because of erotic sexuality, that's like the birthplace of the fear of all of it, right? Like somehow this is going to be an open door to misconduct and abuse and assault. And we're so, I mean, God, let's look at the, what's happening in the news reels right now around just fear-based, like people being motivated into action because of fear versus like, hey, let's pull up and out of this and really look at it. And that's really what I appreciate about your book is it's just really it's not hysterical. Like it's not from this hysterical, oh my God, we have to do better because, oh my God, blah. And I think, you know, we're going to move into talking about the teen years, right? And I really appreciate how well your book highlights kind of the overarching, oh my God, how do we make sure they don't have sex mentality that so many of us have? And if I'm fully honest, including me, you know, we Americans are hung up on this. So tease that mentality apart a little bit, because you have some great stories in the book that were touchstones for you in recognizing, oh yeah, there are different mindsets around teens and sex. Share a little bit about your experience and what you've learned.
Sure. I'd love to. Well, first of all, just to back up, I mean, I was right there with that. You know, when I was, when my first child was almost 3 years old or about three, I got this, you know, kind of horrible feeling that I was way behind in teaching her about her body and, you know, giving her proper terminology and all those things that I believed that she should have, but I hadn't quite, you know, mustered it up at bath time or anything to just actually start getting those words out and practicing that normalization. And it was actually keeping me up at night because I was so afraid that if she didn't have those words, and this is true, it would be harder for her to tell me if something not okay was happening to her out in the world. I mean, she went to preschool every day. I mean, she starting to have her own little life at three. And so I was scared to death. And that is what motivated me to start talking to my daughter about her body. And I didn't realize, I didn't realize that until years later, that when I'm looking back, I was like, darn, I wish I had, you know, done a little more like the Dutch and started a little sooner, like a little more like, you know, yippy at diaper changes and cheerful tone of voice. And when, you know, teaching body parts, you know, all at the same time. And, but yeah, I mean, it really just carries through. I learned at one point, not only do the Dutch have, you know, Dutch and American teenagers have sex for the first time right around the same age, between 17 and 18. And then, but unfortunately, American teenagers end up having babies at more than 5 times the rate of their Dutch peers. And those Dutch peers also, they catch fewer STIs, they have fewer abortions, they sleep around less, they take fewer risks in general. Mm-hmm. And so that's all great, right? But that's all related to those fears, like what we don't want to have happen. And, right. But then I learned that Dutch people will look back on their first sexual experience and they're more than twice as likely as Americans to say that that first experience was positive, that it was fully wanted and enjoyed, well-timed, within their control. And that was a huge mind shift for me to realize, okay, wait a minute. I've been thinking in terms of worries and things I don't want to have happen to my kids in their sexual lives. It has never occurred to me until now to think about what do I want for them in their social, in their sexual lives? What are my hopes and dreams for my children in their sexual lives? I mean, it sounded even like a crazy question at first. And then I realized it's crazy not to be asking that question, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So it was really amazing to start meeting families in Holland and in the U.S. who had found ways of being open and accepting of their teenagers' sexuality and their teenagers' active sex lives. Mm. And what I learned is that the focus on trying to help kids wait longer is not and should not be the end all. It's really more about how can we help prepare them to have a positive experience. So that requires us, you know, as parents and caregivers to dream up, like, what is that? We don't have to get super explicit thinking about our kids, you know, sex lives. But at the same time, I think just some basic sense of what kind of a relationship do I hope that's in? How open do I want those lines of communication to be? Do I want them to know that they can rely on me to pay for their birth control, just like I pay for maybe their tampons, or period supplies, you know? So how supportive, involved, and nurturing can I be in a relationship with my child up until the time that they get interested in starting their sexual experiences, so that they will come to me and say, Mom, Dad, so-and-so and I are thinking about this. Can we talk about it? I know that might sound crazy because traditionally here in the U.S., you know, the way to go is secrecy, you know, park the car, but it's not unheard of. I've seen awesome, inspiring examples of families who achieve that and keep just have established from the time their kids were little, those open lines of communication, even if, you know, their kids are growing up faster than they want them to. The Dutch parents who I met and the American ones too, who have inspired me on this, really are prioritizing their relationship with their kids over their ideals about what and when their kids will do things.
Hi, listeners. Sorry to interrupt this amazing interview. If you are listening to this conversation and you are thinking, oh my gosh, I need more guidance with my teenager and support through these teen years, I am super excited to let you know that the Parenting Teens with Positive Discipline Audio Summit Forever Access Package continues to be available for a limited time. So if you listened into the Audio Summit back in January and you are wishing that you could go back and re-listen to some of those conversations, I got you covered. If you are thinking to yourself, what is this? What is this audio summit? I didn't know anything about it. I got you covered too. The Parenting Teens with Positive Discipline Audio Summit is a collection of 15 interviews with positive discipline trainers and lead trainers from around the world talking about all the things. all the things parenting teens. We talk about how to be firm and maintain relationship, individuation, the foundation of positive discipline. We talk about curfews. We talk about drugs and alcohol. We talk about eating disorders, anxiety and depression, sex and relationships. We talk about getting our kids to contribute. We have a fabulous conversation about schooling and homework. It is so good, and I know that you will love it. All you got to do to get your Forever package, Forever Access package, is go to www.joyfulcourage.com/teensummit. All one word, teen summit. That's www.joyfulcourage.com/teensummit. And you will get the downloads to every single interview, as well as downloads to transcriptions of all of the interviews that I provide in the audio summit. Yay! Go check it out. Now back to the interview. I love that. I mean, that's a huge theme. Every time I talk to somebody on this show or do a solo show, I mean, it's always about relationship. And it's so funny. So a while ago, I went on my personal Facebook page and I just said, hey, I'm doing a poll. I want to see who allows boys into their teen daughters' rooms. Like, who allows, you know? And I mean, I've never had more of a response on my personal page. And it was interesting because at first, like, what came in really fast and furious were things like, what, do you want to be a grandma? Like, every single response came from this place of, if there is a boy in the room, they're having sex. And that, and avoid, and you're an idiot not to avoid that at all costs. And then, you know, I have a lot of parent educators and friends in the positive discipline world who also are my Facebook friends. And so slowly these more, you know, kind of more thoughtful, you know, questions and responses came in, and it was lovely. But it was, I mean, but the vast majority were like, are you insane? Like, why would you do that? You know, and of course, it came from my own conversation with my daughter, who was like, what is the big deal? And my mindset did go to, well, the big deal is there's a bed. And so really recognizing my own come from, too, while also completely hearing what you're saying and wanting that conversation and wanting my kids to know that I won't fly off the handle, that I can be available and handle what it is that they're bringing. But it's really interesting, isn't it? Because we really, and we were talking about this before I hit record, like the double standard lives strong. And I think girls are really held as victims and our boys are seen as, you know, at least on the surface in the media, like boys have no control. Boys will be boys. And our girls, you know, they're the ones, they're going to be targets. And I don't want my kids to be hurt or to be hurtful. And so it's understandable that the path becomes avoid the situation at all costs.
Right. And what's missing in all that is like, are we talking about what these fears and concerns are, you know, amongst ourselves as parents with our kids? Are we helping our kids talk about them with each other? It's kind of a, you know, in so many other areas as parents and teachers, we know better. We know that if we don't talk about it, we're sort of like a, we're willing to gamble.
Yeah.
And yeah, so that's, you know, and one of the things that what you're sharing about with that incredible informal poll on your personal Facebook page, which just sounds great. I have to go read that, is, you know, I'm thinking about how, first of all, Dutch and American parents, sort of that big difference that heck no, there's a really smart social scientist named Amy Shallet who has looked at that and compared Dutch versus American parents' attitudes toward teenage sexuality. And it's 9 out of 10 Dutch parents who say, yeah, I would consider letting my teenage son or daughter have their boyfriend or girlfriend sleep over here at the house in my child's bedroom. And of course, it's 1 in 10 for American parents. The rest are like, oh, where my dead body? So there's that. And one thing I think that's really different, that is such a cool and easy thing that we can do in American culture that's not even like weird and have to do with sex, is simply to really help support.
Wow. Warmer, sunnier days are calling. Thank God. Spring into summer is my favorite time of year. After turning 50 last September, I've been really working on my physical health and well-being and can honestly say that I am feeling better in my body than I have felt in a very long time. Yes, credit goes to movement and working out, but even more credit goes to how I'm feeding my body. That's why I love Factor. I fuel up with Factor's no prep, no mess meals, 35 different meal choices, and more than 60 add-ons to choose from every week. I always have a new flavor to explore. It's amazing. You can crush your wellness goals this May, keep time in the kitchen to a minimum, and enjoy effortless support for the lifestyle you want to be living with dietitian-approved meals and ingredients you can trust from Factor. Head over to factormeals.com/joyful50 and use the code joyful50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next month. That's code joyful50 at factormeals.com/joyful50. Again, that's 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next month while your subscription is active. Yes, yes, yes. Join me. Join me in the health revolution and feel really good this summer. This podcast is sponsored by Active Skin Repair, a skin health company helping people heal with natural, non-toxic, medical-grade ingredients. So as the weather warms up, we're outside gardening or doing yard work. There are so many opportunities for skin issues, right? And for me, it's always a mystery to know what's going to irritate my skin, but I'm definitely out there itching and scratching. But the good news is Active Skin Repair always seems to save the day. Active Skin Repair can be used to treat a wide range of skin issues, including cuts, scrapes, burns, sunburns, rashes, and other types of skin damage. It's also safe and non-toxic, making it suitable for use on all skin types, all parts of the body, and even on rosacea, eczema, and acne-prone skin. Here's what I want you to do. Visit activeskinrepair.com to learn more about Active Skin Repair and get 20% off your order when you use code JOYFUL. Again, that's www.activeskinrepair.com. Find out more about the product and get 20% off your order when you use the code JOYFUL.
Our kids, as they transition out of kind of those preschool years when they have more cross-gender friendships, mm-hmm. to help them hold on to those friendships. Mm-hmm. So boy-girl friendships, mixed-gender friendships, mixed-gender groups, to really actively work on telling our kids why those relationships matter, that boys and girls gain things from spending time together, and that in the future, having had cross-gender friendships through middle childhood helps them so that by the time they arrive at adolescence and they're the same friend is coming over who's been coming over since first grade. First of all, I think for us as parents, it's like, well, why? I know you, right? And my child knows you, and we're in an authentic, you know, well-worn relationship. So it probably wouldn't even occur to you to say, like, no, as of today, you're not going in that room anymore. I mean, maybe, but
right.
But I think the thing is, in adolescence, if we have our boys and girls, or, you know, children of any gender, and of course, this whole conversation is really heteronormative, right? Because it assumes that every kid who's coming over is straight. And, you know, because then you have to start to think, well, if my child's friends are gay or lesbian, are they allowed in the bedroom? It's just a mess, right?
Yeah.
We shouldn't even need to think about that if we know that our kids aren't coming together as foreigners. Mm-hmm. In adolescence, that they've been maintaining friendships and cross genders and sexualities all throughout their middle childhood, so that it's just not, we don't have the sense that they don't know each other in adolescence. Mm-hmm. If we can trust as parents that they think of each other as people first, mm-hmm. and people with genders next, maybe.
Yeah. Well, and I'm also hearing, you know, knowing our kids' friends.
Yeah.
You know, knowing the kids that are showing up. And that was something that came up in the poll too, whereas that conversation of mm-hmm. like, well, you know, it's not an across the board thing. Like, do I know this kid? What's, you know, what do I know about them? How much time have they spent with our family? Mm-hmm. And I'm hearing you saying that as well. And I love that. I love that
you know, promoting cross-gendered friendships, right? And relationships. Mm-hmm. And I have one child that's been his norm, is just running with the girls. He also has really good guy friends, and, you know, and that, so I wonder too, if that's a little
bit. That's an advantage.
Yeah. Well, it's definitely an advantage, especially since he is a girl magnet and he is, you know, almost 13, but he's not like that awkward, I don't know how to talk to girls kind of kid, because
that's
he's
the ticket.
Always
exactly.
Talk to girls.
Yeah.
You know,
exactly. You nailed it.
And I'm really aware of what's happening in our culture right now. And, you know, sometimes I'm like, so, you know, you can't do this, or, you know, let's talk about, you know, what it looks like, what consent looks like. Let's talk about, you know, I'm reading articles and wanting to make sure that I'm not being just, we don't talk about that. So I'm going to just ignore that eventually he is going to be in situations where there will be alcohol and, you know, what, it, and just starting the conversation. Now he gets really irritated, right? Because he's like, Mom, I know that. And I'm like, okay, I am so glad that you know that. And I feel like a much better parent for bringing it up. So just humor me, right?
There you go. Nice.
What are some other ways that we can keep the lines of communication open with our teenagers? And I hear you, like, and you even spoke into this, oh, I could have done better earlier on. I mean, some people might be listening to the show and thinking, oh my God, like, I have done none of the things that this gal is talking about. And now I have a 15, 16-year-old who I'm guessing is sexually active or thinking about it, and we don't have this kind of communication. What are some tips that you have for those parents to be, you know, building and nurturing a relationship that allows for this kind of openness?
Yeah, that's such a great question and such an important one, because I think all of us as parents find ourselves like a little too far down the road in one area or another without, you know, maybe having been prepared. And gosh, I mean, that's the story of our lives as parents. So it's such a good question. And I think the first thing that I would say is, well, you can afford another few days probably to really think first about, you know, what you want your own values to be. Like I was really surprised to learn. I always thought, well, you know, for people to wait longer to have their first sexual experience. And of course, we have to pay attention to what laws are and think about how, you know, in general, maturity is increasing with age, and that's a good thing if kids are going to be experimenting sexually. But I always thought, you know, it was kind of well known that the longer kids wait, the better off they'll be. And it turns out that is in some ways not necessarily supported in the research, and that it's possible that having healthy, reciprocal, you know, respectful sexual intimacy in the teen years can actually be good for teenagers in a lot of the ways that it's really good for adults. Mm-hmm. And so that really kind of gave me pause. And I thought, well, okay, so
great.
Maybe, yeah, it's not even. So I think like there's some stuff for us to grapple with as adults, right?
Yeah.
And so then I think just taking a little time and thinking, you know, and then the other thing to realize too, is that the beauty of it is, you know, the more open we are, and often kind of, we actually, if we have those open lines of communication, we actually have more control than if we forbid, because in many cases, the forbidding just kind of leads to furtive, secretive, you know, interactions between kids that we can't help with, and that our kids might not come to us about if they need help. And so we have, the opportunity to really just, figure out what it is that we want, and for, you know, that how we want to orient ourselves to the idea of teenage sexuality. And if we're in a place where we feel like we can be open and supportive, no matter what our kids tell us, or at least, you know, help guide them with that soft control that we can have, as long as there's an open line of communication, that's probably the starting point. And then otherwise, you know, what you said before about just, oh man, I wish I had said this sooner, or wish I'd brought this up sooner. I mean, that's something that I use to tell my kids, okay, I'm late to the party, and I'm telling you I'm late to the party, and I wish I wasn't. But that's where, you know, sometimes that's where the conversation starts. You know what I found out? I read an article that said, I should have told you such and such when you were 4, but you're 7 now.
Yeah.
So let me tell you about it. You know, I mean, to me, that seems like a way in. And then I also think in a gentler way that seems to be pretty reliable with kids who are willing to communicate with us about their social lives is to just say, you know, what do your friends think about X, Y, or Z? You know, are you, you know, do they talk about pornography? You know, they probably see it. Does it come up in conversation? You know, what, you know, do boys and girls in your middle school spend much time working together? Is it pretty divided? You know, you can just find out, I think, from them what the prevailing opinions and values are that they're encountering every day. And that gives us a chance to influence those.
I love that, Bonnie. And what comes up for me as I listen to you kind of model those questions is the importance of not having an agenda, because our kids' radar is primed for whether or not something is a trap. And so I want to kind of put that out there because, you know, I know that my part of my life's work is to, you know, manage my own micromanager. Oh. Right. And so sometimes when I come in, I can tell typically too, like when my kids feel like, oh, okay, this is a question that she's asking because she wants to tell me that whatever I have to say is wrong. And when I can feel that alive in the space, I get to own it too. Like, I'm wondering if you're thinking that I'm looking for a certain answer here.
Oh, I love that.
You know, and so kind of like what you were saying about, hey, this is something I probably should have said, you know, a long time ago. I think the more open and transparent we can be with our kids, the better, especially in this context, because I mean, to try to have conversation and act like, man, this is no big deal, it's going to fall flat, right? We get to, like, full permission, I think, to say, like, you know, this kind of makes me uncomfortable, but I feel like it's really important for us to be talking about this.
Yeah, that's perfect. Yeah, this is hard for me. Let me tell you a little bit about why. Here's how I grew up, you know, and this is what my parents or teachers did or didn't do for me around this.
Right.
And I'm still learning too. I mean, we are as a generation, I think. I mean, so many of us have, I think, said from the time our kids were born, like, that we want to be honest and open with them and make sure that they're grounded and comfortable in all their growth areas as they develop into whole people, including their sexuality. But very few of us have really reliably good models for how that looks, especially around sexuality. Yeah. And so we can tell our kids that too, like, you know?
Yeah, clearly. I mean, the amount of stories that are coming to the surface right now, clearly we have not had good models of what it looks like to be open in conversations around sex and sexuality. So we can do better.
Well, yeah. And I think I'm a bit of a crazy, maybe I'm too optimistic, but I love telling young people now, this is as far as we've been able to get. It's not a pretty picture. I have faith that you're going to do more and you're going to move us farther. And that's you. Like, how can we help?
Yeah. So what are your thoughts around, you know, because we all live on the continuum of comfort around talking about sex and sexual development. And so for the parents coming into these conversations, how can we help ourselves in navigating all the feels and the baggage and the fear and, like, all the stuff so that we can be available to our kids inside of these conversations? Do you have any thoughts around that?
Oh,
how we get over ourselves.
I mean, yeah, I think a lot of that is really, really a lot of honoring ourselves and being forgiving with ourselves and seeing that, you know, having a growth mindset about where we're headed, but knowing that we might not be there yet and being okay with ourselves in that. So, you know, a couple of the things that I learned observing the Dutch approach and asking experts are that, you know, first of all, you don't have to worry the way I was really worried about that you'll tell your kid too much, too young.
So, and they'll be crazy sex maniacs.
Right, exactly. It's like, I know it's so counterintuitive, but it's like just the opposite.
Yeah.
And then, you know, and it's really easy to say that, you know, ideally we start when our kids are babies and we're practicing, you know, body terminology and things like that so that we don't choke on those words. And then the older our kids get, the more of a foundation we have to build on explanations and descriptions and that kind of thing. So that by the time our kids get older, we've grown to together and we're mm-hmm. all more comfortable with sexuality. So there might not be as many hangups as if, you know, we've kind of felt like we needed to keep it kind of on lockdown. And so then there's that question, right? Mm-hmm. If it's been on lockdown, I think it's still the same. I mean, I think it's still about practice, but now mm-hmm. you sort of need an intensive.
Yeah. Right?
So that might be talking with friends. I mean, look, I was the mother of two whole entire human female children when I realized I still don't know the difference between a vagina and a vulva.
Yeah.
So I better look it up, right? I need to start getting answers to these questions and getting more comfortable with, you know, whatever it is. And so I think, you know, there are great resources. I do have some of those on my website that I think are awesome for parents and young people alike.
Yeah.
But the more we can talk, I think, with our friends, with our kids' teachers, with our yes. kids themselves, with our partners, and, you know, with our younger children while our older children are around, with our older children while our younger children are around, mm-hmm. you know, it's all practice and it all leads into that, you know, kind of more ease and normalization that we, you know, then can kind of enjoy later as open lines of communication that we can rely on as some of the, actually something that really can help us keep our kids, you know, healthy and happy and whole and experience love and intimacy and romance in those really wholesome ways that we want them to.
Yeah. Well, and I just appreciate just authenticity, right? And talking to each other. And, you know, we talk about, we have no village. We have a village. It's mm. just a matter of turning to the person next to you, reaching out to our friends mm-hmm. and being willing to have uncomfortable conversations. So yeah. grateful for people like you and Amy Lang and other mm-hmm. leaders who really are providing a lot of positive, powerful resources. So thank you. So
My
much
pleasure.
For your work. In the context of parenting our kids through their sexual development, what does joyful courage mean to you, Bonnie?
Oh my gosh. To me, joyful courage is all about that permission, mm-hmm. that freeing sense of permission that I got from observing parents who knew that, you know, making little mistakes in a day-to-day conversation with our kids about healthy sexuality, it's meaningless, those little mistakes. The big thing that we're doing right is having an interest in relating with them on that mm-hmm. subject. And so when I realized that it's really hard, it's not a thing to damage our kids by telling them too much. It's not a thing to damage our kids by telling them something that wasn't accurate one day and coming back, circling back mm-hmm. to it another day. It's, you know, knowing that I could be gentle with myself and that we could actually have fun with the conversations once they kind of got to just be a thread through our normal life. You know, basically joyful courage for me in this is about going headlong into it, you know, with optimism and mm. cheerfulness and hope and trust.
Mm, I love that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Where can listeners find you and your book and all of your work?
Listeners can find Beyond Birds and Bees anywhere they love to buy a book, maybe their neighborhood indie or their favorite online retailer. Mm-hmm. And otherwise, I can be found online at my website, www.bonniejruff.com. And there I have some of my favorite resources and just a little bit more in-depth on Beyond Birds and Bees. And beyond that, people can connect with me on Facebook or, Facebook mainly, but also Twitter and Instagram.
Awesome. Thank you so much for spending time with me and coming on the show.
It's been great. Thank you.
Joyful Courage community, thank you so much for tuning in each and every week. Big thanks and love to my team, including my producer, Chris Mann at Podshaper. Be sure to join the discussion over at the Live and Love with Joyful Courage group page, as well as the Joyful Courage business pages on Facebook and Instagram. Subscribe to the show through Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, iHeartRadio, really anywhere you find your favorite podcasts. Also, I mentioned Patreon at the beginning of the show. Check it out, www.patreon.com/joyfulcourage. This is where you can contribute to the show and take advantage of patron perks like content-rich monthly webinars and deeper discussions about what's being shared on the podcast. You will like it. www.patreon.com. joyfulcourage.com/joyfulcourage. Any comments or feedback about this show or any others can be sent to casey@joyfulcourage.com. I personally read and respond to all the emails that come my way, so reach out. You can also sign up for my bi-weekly newsletter at joyfulcourage.com. Just go to the website, sign up for that. Take a breath, drop into your body, find the balcony seat, and trust that everyone is going to be okay. Big love to each and every one of you. Have a beautiful rest of your day.
When it comes to raising kids, there's so much to consider. Things like, what do we feed them? When do we feed them? How do they sleep? What does it look like to raise kind kids? How does their nervous system work? How do I keep myself calm? What are my triggers? There's so much that comes into play. And we are distilling all of that information for you at Voices of Your Village podcast, where we bring experts in the field of early childhood and education and psychology and across the board so that you don't have to comb the internet for information. You get to show up and hang out and have shame-free, judgment-free conversations and insights into what it looks like to raise kind, empathetic, emotionally intelligent humans. I'm Alyssa Blask Campbell. I have a master's degree in early childhood education. I'm a mom of two, and I am walking this journey right alongside you doing this work. Come hang out with me at Voices of Your Village, and we can dive into real conversations with actionable tips.